Years ago, I had a subscription to a magazine on biblical archaeology. And I liked to get the magazine because it kept me up to date on some of the newer discoveries in the world of archaeology as it related to the scriptures. It kind of fills in some of the blanks, and you learn a little bit of the context about the era in which these people lived within the Bible. Well, something else I learned when I started reading that magazine on biblical archaeology is how much archaeologists love garbage. They especially get excited when they discover ancient garbage dumps. It's true. They have a special name for the garbage dumps. They call them middens. And archaeologists, like, they just love this old garbage to the point that some of them call their occupation the science of rubbish. They refer to themselves as garbageologists. And why? Why do archaeologists do this? Because you can tell a lot about a person and about a people when you go through their garbage. Right? To an archaeologist, finding garbage is like striking gold. Right? Garbage can tell you a lot about what daily life was like for somebody. Tell you about what they ate, what they drank, what was important, what they kept, what they considered to be disposable. You know, there's an archaeological group called the Garbage Project, and the director said, you know, it's amazing. I looked over everything that we have done and just how much food got thrown out into the trash that was probably edible and things that hardly were ever used that got thrown away. You know, it's amazing, right? How much you can learn about a people or a person by looking at what they considered to be disposable and what they were willing to just throw away. Now, I know Jesus wasn't an archaeologist, but he knew enough about the people to whom he was speaking that day he gave his Sermon on the Mount that, you know what, he figured he had to touch a little bit on waste management. Right? Jesus also knew that you could tell a lot about in regards to what people valued by what it was they were willing to toss away or throw away. And so he names two things in this beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. Jim mentioned for us this morning. And it comes when he gives the examples of salt and light. Now the word salt itself, it's self-evident. It's there in the text. But when Jesus, you see, when he refers to light, when he says you don't light a lamp and hide it under a bushel basket, he is actually speaking here of the value of olive oil. See, olives and olive oil were of incredible value in the ancient world. I mean, yeah, we go to the grocery store and olive oil, it can be run up, get a little pricey, but we don't think, I think, have an appreciation as to what olives meant to the people in the ancient world. You know, olives were so valuable in ancient Greece, if you cut down an olive tree, it was punishable by death. Think about that. That's how valuable they were, right? Olives were used for nutrition, right? Used in cooking, for medicinal purposes. Olive oil was used for religious purposes. And also, it was a source of energy. It was oil, right? People burned it for light. It was, for some people, their only source of light. You know, they might have had a fire in the hearth, but to light a household, if you were going to have a source of light, it was olive oil, and it was incredibly expensive and precious and valuable. Therefore, if you were to light a lamp with olive oil and put a bushel over it, what are you doing? That just was unheard of. Why would you do such a thing? It would just be considered a complete and utter waste. And salt is the second one I mentioned. How valuable was salt in the ancient world? Well, salt, you see, was used as a method of trade and of currency. Salt was so valued in the ancient world that its production was legally restricted. Think of the things in our world, right, that are produced now that are legally restricted. They tend to be things of great value. Well, so it was in the ancient world for salt. You know, the word salary, think of how this, the word salary actually comes from the word for salt. Because you see, Roman soldiers were paid with a ration that included salt. So that ancient proverb, you know, someone isn't worth their salt, that comes from the Roman era. You could think of soldiers, you know, maybe making comments about some of their other fellow soldiers not being worth their salt. So Jesus raises these two examples, you know, telling them that they're salt and light. And when he says this, he says, in other words, these are, you know, you would never consider throwing these things away or wasting these things, right? You're not meant to be thrown to the trash heap of life or the garbage heap of this world, right? Because no one would dream of throwing salt away and trampling it underfoot. That would have been scandalous. So why would you do it to a human being? Right? I mean, no one would dream of lighting a lamp and then covering up. So why would you seek to muffle or silence a human being? Yet Jesus knew that happened in his world. That people in his day weren't necessarily as valued as salt and as olive oil. People did not value themselves the way God sought to value them. I mean, there were people, who treated others and perhaps saw them as disposable. You know, who could not see themselves or couldn't see others as being valuable, as being as indispensable as salt and light. I mean, people in Jesus' age were often considered to be disposable, of little worth or value. I mean, Jesus wanted to draw attention to this, not only in his sermon, but throughout his ministry and even in his death. You know, a lot of archaeologists, something else I learned in those magazines I read, a lot of archaeologists believe with good reason, is that when Jesus was crucified, his cross actually stood on the area that served as the garbage dump for the city of Jerusalem. Jesus knew full well what it meant to be treated like garbage and to be considered disposable in this world, and just how easy at times it is for human beings to see each other or to treat others as garbage. And you know, I think that's something we need to take to heart and consider seriously in a world, in our own day and age. You know, we spend so much money and resources thinking about what to do with our garbage, how to manage waste, and, you know, how we seek to value what we throw away. I know Marianne has a lot of suggestions for me when it comes to what I should think about throwing away, but that's another story. But, we have to reduce and reuse and recycle, and I get all of that because it's important. It's a good thing. We need to take care of our precious resources, find ways to use less, be better stewards of the creation that has been entrusted to us for future generations. But you know, every day people in this world, for a number of reasons, are considered or deemed to be disposable and end up relegated to the trash heap of life, and maybe we don't talk enough about that. To look back on human history is to find innumerable examples of times and periods of political and social strife when people were not just marginalized, they were killed because other human beings looked upon them as being disposable. I mean, consider the Holocaust, upwards of 6 million Jews killed by the Nazis, or go, you know, just 15 years, perhaps earlier than that, 20 years, there was the Armenian genocide in Turkey where up to 1 million Armenians had been wiped out. We hardly hear about them. And then just 20 years ago, what happened in Rwanda between the Hutus and the Tutsis, within 3 months, 500,000 people were killed. You know, there's some really large examples of what can happen, and you know, for us to consider how human beings can be capable of such things at such a scale. And sometimes perhaps maybe that's a distraction, that those larger examples, when we look at them, make the smaller examples not seem so bad, right? Pale in comparison. Maybe we don't consider how some of our own actions in our own lives might end up having us look at ourselves or others not as being as valuable as salt and light. You know, we don't perhaps look at others as something we would never throw away or trample underfoot, but instead we can look at someone sometime and perhaps think, well, they're just fit for the pit, someone who's expendable. And it's especially true in a politically charged world like ours. You know, there is so much political debate, and political opinion controls so much that we need to be careful because, you see, our politics can ultimately change the way we think about others. I mean, for example, this past week, the National Prayer Breakfast took place in Washington, D.C. Did anyone read about the prayer breakfast this past week? Well, the event's keynote speaker was a Harvard University professor. His name is Arthur Brooks. And in his address, you know, Brooks encouraged the people who were in attendance at that prayer breakfast to not let their disagreements over politics lead to contempt for one another. And as he spoke, you know, Brooks himself recalled speaking to groups of activists in the past and telling them that their political opponents, they're not evil, they're not stupid. I mean, understanding that, you know, to start believing these things can lead us to view others as being less than human. And so he challenged his listeners to remember their loved ones with whom they have different points of view. It's important, I think, sometimes for us to remember we can have people in our lives we love we don't always see eye to eye. Because you see, in politics, that can sometimes be harder, right? That can be hard to put into practice, especially when politics becomes more important than people. I mean, Brooks asked the crowd that had gathered for the prayer breakfast, he said, how many of you love somebody with whom you disagree with politically? And then he asked them to raise their hands. Well, there were some who didn't raise their hands. The president, by the way, was one of them. But you see what, Brooks, that's neither here nor there in some respects. I think, you know, the president was probably feeling a little stung over the whole impeachment thing. But anyways, what Brooks was really getting at is that he wanted people to be able to acknowledge the worth of their fellow human beings, regardless of politics. I mean, Brooks knows that the political arena is a place where people are deemed disposable all the time. But I still think that besides politics, that's true in a lot of areas of life too. Because there's examples of many relationships in which sooner or later someone's just deemed disposable. It can happen in a marriage, right? It can happen in a relationship with an employer or employee, between a parent and a child. I see it in our society sometimes in how we treat our elderly and so on. You see, the challenge for us as a people of faith at times is one that calls us to value relationships. Value these relationships and therefore value ourselves and others in a different light. Right? Jesus' teaching in the Sermon on the Mount, at least, you know, in that first section, says a great deal about who and what it is we value. That's how Jesus starts out his Sermon on the Mount. What do we know those, that opening part that Jim read for us this morning are the Beatitudes. And the Beatitudes are a set of value statements. Right? And they state who it is that is, what's the word? Blessed. You see, people use the word blessed as a value statement all the time. Especially, you know, describing themselves or perhaps enviously describing somebody else. Any of you watched the Super Bowl last Sunday? You saw, heard the players afterwards or saw the tweets, you know, the ones who won the Super Bowl exclaiming how blessed they were. And I suppose they are blessed. But you see, blessing, how it's most commonly understood in this world, it's a value statement, I guess, where people would say how good it is when things go my way. Right? That's what being blessed is. You know, I got the job I wanted, I must be blessed. I got an A on my exam, I must be blessed. Or how about I beat cancer, I must be blessed. And, you know, those are all good things. But I like to think that, you know, the person who didn't get the job or the person who didn't get the A or even the person who wasn't able to beat cancer, that they're still blessed too. And that's why I believe in that Sermon on the Mount, Jesus begins by extending blessing to people in this world and people living by a particular code or moral standard and moves into areas of life in which people might not necessarily believe they are blessed or that people are blessed. Jesus says things like, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are the meek, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice, blessed are the merciful. Blessed are those who are persecuted. You see, Jesus extends the meaning of blessing because Jesus wants to reveal a worth in instances and in moral behavior that others may be consider to be nothing more than a waste of time and a waste of life. Right? Jesus is expecting his followers to see the value of others and the value of their actions towards others in a way that seeks to avoid diminishing human life. Right? For Jesus, it's not just some lives that matter. It's not just some who are holy. It's why Jesus says that his followers would need a righteousness that exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees. And let me unpack that a little. Because you see, the scribes and the Pharisees controlled a lot of the political and social and religious dialogue of Jesus' day. In other words, the scribes and the Pharisees, they would be the ones who would be at the national prayer breakfast, if there was one then. They were the self-proclaimed experts in the law when it came to deciding who was holy and who wasn't, who was disposable and who wasn't, exceeding the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees means seeing the value of others in a way that doesn't get you to the point where you would say, well, I'm holy and you're not, or I'm blessed and you aren't. I am of value, but not you. Jesus does not want his followers relegating others to a trash heap. And the law of God was not given so human life could be diminished or disposed of. Right? The scribes and the Pharisees, they used the law in order to determine who was holy and who wasn't. But Jesus says, no, that's not the case. And I'm not here to do away with the law. He says, I did not come to destroy the law, but to fulfill. In other words, he's saying, you know, I'm not here to dispose of God or of people who don't suit my purposes or fit my lifestyle or ideology or agenda. That's not my way. You know, as I was meditating, thinking about this, and it reminded me of a sermon I read once by Martin Luther King Jr. And I mentioned Martin Luther King Jr., yes, because it's Black History Month, and it's good to remember his contributions along with so many others. But more importantly, you know, he was a man who grew up in a society where many would have looked upon him because he was Black as being someone who was disposable. And throughout his ministry, there were always ones who treated him with contempt and believed that he was disposable and that he should be gotten rid of, until eventually this man who preached nonviolence and the value of all human beings, which to me is at the heart of all civil rights, was deemed disposable and then assassinated. And you know, most people, when they think of King, think of him as a great civil rights activist. Without doubt, he was, and a great orator. But we can forget at times that, yes, King was a Christian. He was a follower of Jesus. And that he was a minister who for many years in his life engaged in congregational ministry, spent a lot of time working on his sermon for Sunday morning. And, you know, what I really appreciate after reading through some of his sermons is that he said the same thing, a lot over and over again. Made me feel good, you know, that, okay, that's all right. But you know, his character and his human being, indeed, the civil rights movement was impacted deeply because of the Christian faith of the people who were involved in it. And the teachings of Jesus remained at the heart of Martin Luther King's ministry, especially what we hear in the Sermon on the Mount. And so in one of his sermons that I read once, and it was a handwritten copy, and there was a little notation in that beatitude, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Martin Luther King Jr. had obviously highlighted it and put a little note in and said, ultimate importance. Because you see, he understood that our relationship and how we see ourselves in relationship with others is really important in God's kingdom, right? To understand ourselves as children of God is not only to see the relationship we have as being a relationship with God, it's a relationship we have with each other as brothers and sisters in faith, right? We seek justice for ourselves because it brings justice to others as well. We seek to be salt and light because it means others can be salt and light too. In another of his sermons, King said to the ones who treated him with contempt and thought less of him and thought perhaps that he should be done away with, he said these words. He said, "We shall match your capacity to inflict suffering by our capacity to endure suffering. We shall meet your physical force with soul force. Do to us what you will, and we shall continue to love you. One day we shall win freedom, but not only for ourselves. We shall so appeal to your heart and conscience that we shall win you in the process, and our victory will be a double victory." You see, for King, it wasn't just about seeing the value of his own people or his inner circle. It was how he and his people would come to appreciate their value as they valued others at the same time. King wasn't ready to discard his opponents to the trash heap. He wanted to win their freedom too. Right? For his people to see their true value meant holding on to the value of all people. Right? Justice for his people had to be seen as justice for all people. Civil rights for his people had to be civil rights for all people. King knew when Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth and the light of the world," that he was saying to all the people who were gathered there that day. Right? And even though Jesus had been hung on a cross and left to waste, through the spirit of his resurrection and the strength of the love of God in his kingdom, he says those words still to all people for eternity. "You are the salt of the earth and the light of the world." Amen.